right. It is time to start our Aging Well Together show. I'm looking at my guests. Can you hear me okay? Mm-hmm. We were just playing with microphones and sounds. All right. Welcome. And we are so sorry we missed coming to you live last week. There was a bit of a tropical storm. Debbie made it a little complicated to have our show. So I am so grateful. We have an amazing guest today. And we both did kind of a night before decision. Let's hold off for a week because we weren't sure if the station signal and if it'd be safe to drive. And so we held off for a week. Welcome. We have what will be, we planned this a few months ago. I know this will be a really informative show today, all about legal issues. And I'm thrilled we have Mary Markovich with us. She specializes in elder and disability law. And there's so much for us to talk about. I know I have all kinds of questions for her. I am excited for all we'll learn together. But as always, before we dive into our show, we want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. Our fabulous little show. It is our 51st episode. I'm so excited and so thankful to the tremendously wonderful team at the Orange County Department on Aging for sponsoring our show and starting it and bringing me on board. You can join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. You can catch us live every Thursday from 2 to 3, barring no weather crises. And then you can also stream us live through WCOMFM.org. That's the station's website. Or you can listen to any of our previous shows, aka our podcasts, through the Orange County Department on Aging's website. And we just updated our Aging Well Together show website. It was taking a long time to download, and so we were getting some listener feedback that it was a little too clunky to open the shows. And so much love out to Marilyn at the Orange County Department on Aging for making it even more accessible. You can go to the Orange County Department on Aging's website, and it is, get your pens out, www.orangecountync.gov/aging. Again, orangecountync.gov/aging. And on the website, not only can you find links to our Aging Well Together radio show, as well, you can also find a host of other helpful resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina. And if you have questions about any of the resources we discuss on any of our shows, or if you want to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, you can either call the Department on Aging, and their telephone number is 919-968-2070, or you can email me, and many thanks to those of you who continue to do that with suggestions. I so appreciate it. We are now booking shows in October and November in 2025, so I'm so excited to bring in any of the voices and experiences you want to hear about. And you can email me at one big long email address called the Aging Well Together Show at gmail.com. So all together, Aging Well Together Show at gmail.com. You can email me. And a program note, so excited for September, all four shows in September in honor of Falls Prevention Month. All four shows, all the speakers coming in each week will address some issue related to falls and ideally keeping you all upright and safe and healthy. So that's going to be really exciting. You heard just a little bit of music as we started our show. A shout out to the Carrboro Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, for allowing us to use their great music for our opening, and you will hear more about it for our closing music. We use their original song, Mayfly. So appreciative of that. And you're only going to hear my voice today and the voice of my lovely guest, Mary Markovich. You're not going to hear Alicia Reed, my fun and fabulous and inspiring co-host. Alicia, as you all know, for our loyal listeners, she's one of the wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging. She is traveling today, but she said she was going to be listening into the show, so we miss you, Alicia, and hope you are traveling well. All right, before I turn to me, I do have a little note here in the WCOM studio. They wanted us to share that the fourth annual WCOM Classic Disc Golf Tournament fundraiser is going to be Saturday, September 14th at the beautiful Pluck Farm in Mebane, North Carolina. Once again, we'll have divisions for casual and competitive singles starting at 10 a.m. I've never played disc golf before. Have you, Mary? I would have to be the you and I could do the casual ones. And there'll be a very popular team scramble starting at noon. DJ Senny Sequoia is, I hope I'm saying that right, will be in the booth featuring LP Hovercraft. So there'll be fun music. Registration is only $20 per player, and they're still looking for a few hole sponsors. And as our wonderful listeners know, or if you don't know, WCOM, we're going to be moving soon. And we're moving to another radio station, another part of Carrboro, right around the corner. I have mixed feelings about it. I love this quirky studio. I guess I should be excited about getting fancier digs, but I'm going to miss it here. But moving is super expensive, and we greatly appreciate your support, either for the disc golf tournament or if you want to do another contribution to help support the move. You can check out the website at WCOMFM.org for details and to register. So keep us in mind, and it our fall show. I'm not sure when the big move is, but at some point it will be coming up, and we'll be coming to you from a different environment. But for now, for me, I am Heather Altman. If you haven't already figured that out, I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. Get lots of questions about our topics for today, so I'm so excited for our guest. I'm also a caregiver for older family members, and at 53, you all hear me say, I am focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, our guest has been patiently looking at me, chat into the mic. I am so excited to have Mary Markovich here. Mary and I met, we were just talking, we met at, a Chamber of Commerce women's event, and we had met, and then a mutual colleague introduced us, and I was like, Mary, I just met Mary. I want to have her on the show. Mary is an attorney. She has over 30 years of experience. She serves clients, it says in the greater Raleigh area, but that also includes us here in Chapel Hill, Carrboro.
Yes,
I'm getting the yes. She provides a broad range of legal and law-related services for nonprofits, small business owners, veterans, and retirees. And she specializes, and I want to talk all about the veterans and retirees today. She specializes in elder law and special needs planning and estate planning and disability planning and life care planning. That's a lot of planning. And so I'm so excited. I did do a bit of stalking of you, Mary. I did see on your website, not only are you an attorney, but you also have your MBA in finance and decision sciences. So clearly, you bring a wealth of knowledge and experience. You have all kinds of cool memberships that I want to talk about, some of them, especially this first one. You're a member of the United States Supreme Court Bar. I want to talk about that. You're an accredited attorney by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. You were admitted to practice before the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. You've been a member of the North Carolina Bar since 1994, so that really is 30 years. Congratulations. You are licensed to practice in all North Carolina courts and in Eastern North Carolina Federal District Court. You're a member of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, a member of the Academy of Special Needs Planners, and a member of Wealth Council. I say all of that so people know why I am so excited to have you here on the show. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you for inviting me. And I appreciate your peppy expertise.
I love it. Peppy. The expertise, that was kind. I'm not sure if we'll do expertise. I warned Mary beforehand. I know enough to have a lot of questions, but I don't have the answers, which is why I'm happy for you to be here. Before we get into your services and my peppering you, with questions, there's the pep for you. Tell us a little bit, we always ask our guests, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, your background, and how you got into law. You don't have to rush through this, and how you got into specifically estate planning and elder law. There you go.
Originally, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Nice.
We moved here because my husband wanted to, he was working at a funeral home and he wanted more training to be a funeral director.
Mm-hmm.
When he died, I became the sole parent of 7 minor children.
Okay, clearly we are just meeting each other on the air. We knew each other over cocktails very quickly. First of all, I'm really sorry about your husband passing. And 7 children, go on.
So, went back to school and got my accounting degree. I just had a few courses more to take. But couldn't find a job, and so as a family, we had a family council, my children and I, and decided Mom was going to go to law school.
Wow.
So we all went to law school. They took care of the running of the house, planning the meals, fixing the meals and everything. I just went to the store and bought the food that they decided that was a good meal, good, well-balanced meal. And so we made it through. We lived in Chapel Hill while I went to school at North Carolina Central.
Uh-huh.
I have 4 children who graduated from Chapel Hill High.
Okay.
And so that's my story.
Okay, I want to do nothing but talk about that. How old were your kids when you did? Because I went back to graduate school when my kids were like, they were going into, I think, 3rd grade, and it must have been 7th grade.
The youngest was 3, the oldest was 15. Now, some of these children were adopted, you know, but...
Still, you're their parent. That's 7 kids.
So that was...
Wow.
The challenge.
And so they all must be so proud of you.
Well, I'm proud of them. They're all, you know, good citizens, hard workers. Some of them have college degrees. Mm-hmm. Some chose to be stay-at-home moms, as I was.
Did any choose to be follow in your footsteps and become attorneys?
No, I'm sorry
to say.
She's rolling
her eyes.
We do have an accountant, a physician, an analytical science, and a chemist, and she's a software designer, another one's a software designer. The others are stay-at-home moms.
So they're all doing meaningful work. That's wonderful. And so you decide to go to law school later on in life, and then how come elder law and disability law?
Well, I went to law school. I thought I was going to be a tax attorney.
Okay.
Because I'm one of those people who love the IRS code and
Bless
analyzing.
We need more people. There's actually a whole thing about tax attorneys. There's like a whole thing going on about we need more good tax attorneys. Okay, go on.
So I interned with an elder law attorney who was also a CPA during law school. I just fell in love with it because my parents died when I was a teenager. And so this was like taking care of my parents, the people who were coming to me, and that was my interaction and my introduction to elder law. So I just loved it and decided that's what I want to do.
That is amazing. And then do you practice here in Chapel Hill? Is your office in Raleigh? Because I know we met here in, well, we're in Carrboro right now, but have you always practiced in this area, or were you?
Well, I've always had an office. Well, I've had several offices, 3 offices at one time. Now I've downsized to 1 Raleigh office. I live in Briar Chapel Chapel Hill. So, you know, I'm still connected with Chapel Hill, and I have been since law school.
Yeah, and then you can go that back way to Raleigh.
Right.
All right. So I want to talk to you about the services you provide, but it's really funny, and I told you we were going to do it beforehand. Our previous show, the show we had right before this, was with financial planners and financial advisors, and they made me do a disclaimer, and so I thought we should probably do a disclaimer for this show, because I really do want to get into the and do the word educational information about estate planning and other legal services is what we're going to talk about. But so I created a little bit of a disclaimer today, because I thought, you know, let's do this. The information, listeners, this is for you. Well, I guess the whole show is for you. But this disclaimer, the information presented is for general educational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, or financial advice. The information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and therefore is not intended as recommendations for any specific individuals. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified legal advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Otherwise, this all means please do not sue WCOM or Orange County Department on Aging or Mary Markovich for anything you hear today. This is for education and maybe even a little bit of entertainment, but that's what today's show is about. How is that? I did not run
thank
this past
you
my
so
new
much.
Attorney. Was that a good disclaimer?
Thank you so much. That's all right. Excellent. It's not for a specific situation. It's general educational purposes only.
There we go. All right. So now having said that, you as an estate planning attorney or any estate planning attorney, I want to understand, well, you can, maybe I'll go big picture first. What are the different services that you offer? Because you don't just do estate plan. Again, I had fun stalking you a little bit. You do a number of things in your law practice.
Well, estate planning is the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody over 18 should be planning. And whether it's powers of attorney or wills, trusts. Sometimes when people think of estate planning, they only think of wills.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much more because before, when we're 18 and younger, our parents take care of us, whatever decisions to be made. Once we're 19, then we have to make our own decisions.
Yes.
And if we don't, then some loved one has to go into the court, petition the court for guardianship to be able to make our decisions. So many years ago, I don't remember the exact year, but you may have heard of a woman whose last name was Schiavo.
Yes. Is it Teresa Schiavo? Where there was Nancy, there was Cruzan, Teresa, there was Nancy Cruzan, Teresa Schiavo, Kathy. Anyway, there was a Kathy, Teresa, and Nancy.
Okay, well,
I'm mixing them up, yes.
This young woman was in her early
30s. It was Terry Schiavo.
Terry Schiavo.
Mm-hmm.
She was in her early 30s and didn't think estate planning was for her. That was for somebody who was much older. So she had an eating disorder and then had a stroke and was not able to speak for herself. And so she went into... not a medically induced coma, but mm-hmm. later on they put her in a medically induced coma. So she was in a vegetative state. Then, because she had never executed a health care power of attorney, then she had husband who said, she doesn't want to live like this. We've discussed it personally. She didn't put it in writing, but mm-hmm. she doesn't want to be in a vegetative state. And her parents said, oh no.
Mm-hmm.
Use any extraordinary means available to keep her alive as long as possible. And she did remain in a vegetative state for a little over 15 years.
Oh, I knew there was huge legal battles because when I look at advanced care planning, those three cases always come up. So I didn't realize it went for that long because they, and this went in and out of the court system, right? About
right.
whether they could
it,
basically
bankrupted
turn off
her,
the...
Bankrupted her husband. Ugh. And, you know, it was just really tragic. So that could happen to any of us. Even if there's no kind of court battle, somebody has to be responsible for the person.
Mm-hmm.
So there's guardianship of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
That's for financial. Guardianship of the person. That's for medical,
mm-hmm.
health-related.
Mm-hmm.
And combined, it's called general guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the umbrella, the very beginning. We always want to make our own decisions about our body,
mm-hmm.
what to do or not to do to it, and our finances, who's going to handle our finances.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad you bring this up. And I think this is, you don't know what I'm going to say, but this is a really perfect week to do this. It is back to school week for colleges. Mm-hmm. And I can show you my my phone and my text line from this weekend. Two of my really close friends brought their daughters to college, And my both of my girls are already in college, and I need to do it for one of them. But they quickly went around, wait a second, they're over 18. We need HIPAA documents to share information. We need healthcare power of attorney documents. We need all these things that, and then durable power of attorney, all these things that as soon as you're 18 and your child moves from home. And absolutely. So we had a quick talk, and I'm a notary and helping them with it. But it, so at really pushing it, and a lot of families will hear it this week, now that you're, I see that on the college, now that your kids are in college, you need these documents for any age. And I think you started to, even just basic sharing information, not something as crisis as Terry Schiavo's, but my daughter turned 18, and within 5 minutes, I got an email from her doctor's office. Your record has now been disconnected. Mm-hmm. Your daughter needs to come in and fill yes. out a release of information if you're going to get anything else.
Yes.
Within 5 minutes, it was automatic. All right, so estate planning is so putting all of these documents in place so that way if you can't speak for yourself, someone can speak for you. Are there... This is a leading question because I know what the answer is. Do you have, I've seen different people say 5 or 3. Are there a few documents that you say everyone over the age of 18 should have these documents?
I would say the healthcare power of attorney, mm-hmm. advance directive for a natural death, mm-hmm. HIPAA authorization, mm-hmm. and durable general power of attorney.
Yeah.
Those are the basics.
And that's what I've heard too. And in different states, they call them different things. So healthcare right. power of attorney, sometimes it's called what? Healthcare proxy,
right.
POA. My sisters and I were talking about documents that were in like Massachusetts, sometimes they call them the living will, right? So the advance directive for a natural.
So most attorneys do not like that term because.
You don't. Tell me.
A will is only effective at a date of a person's death. So how could it be a living will? See, that's the oxymoron there. So in North Carolina, it's called Declaration of a Desire for Natural Death.
Interesting. And I use the practical form when I do my workshops, and I think it uses the term living will. I have to check. But yeah, so all mm-hmm. of these terms kind of go to the same thing, which is advanced directive. What is it? Directive for a natural death.
What you want done with your physical body or not done.
Uh-huh.
And some people are very specific. And then some people say, well, let whoever I've authorized, let them make the decisions, usually a family member, mm-hmm. a spouse, or a child. And
but you have to even clarify that because Terry Schiavo didn't do that. She didn't have that to say, let my husband
correct.
Make the decisions. So
correct.
That's why you need this.
Has to be in writing.
Okay, so all of those documents, so the HIPAA, which is the information release, well, because everyone thinks it's the privacy, but healthcare insurance portability. Anyway, it's your privacy information. So HIPAA, advance directive for a natural death, your healthcare power of attorney, which is information about your body, and then your durable or financial power of attorney is
correct.
All the different names. Okay,
correct.
Four. Okay, so you make sure they have that. I know people ask me then, well, what's, and you kind of went into it, what's the difference between a will? And then they're used to the living will, so it kind of confuses them. I have people ask me about that.
Well, all of those four documents we talked about are only effective during a person's lifetime.
Yes.
And at the date of death, then the person has no authorization, or if someone recovers. For instance, if you're in a car accident
mm-hmm.
and you're not able to speak for yourself, you're unconscious, whoever you've authorized makes healthcare decisions for you. Then once you recover and you can nod your head or speak, then that person no longer has authorization. Mm-hmm. You make your own decisions.
We know that well. My father was on the show, and he has allowed me to share it publicly. I was, when he got really sick and was in the ICU, my sisters and I took over. And then as soon as he regained consciousness and decisional capacity,
right.
we were able to get his insight. So, yeah, I know that temporary. And I remind him of it often as I say, well, while you were sleeping, this is what I took care of.
You relied on me.
I know. So then what do you tell people to be prepared for after they pass away? This is what people generally think of as estate planning.
That's the will.
That's the will.
And that's effective only effective at the date of death.
Mm-hmm.
And a transition document is a trust. And the trust can be effective during lifetime or at the date of death. And during lifetime, I've had clients fact, I have several clients still living who are over 100.
Wow.
They choose not to do any of this. They have cognitive ability, mm-hmm. but they want their, usually it's their grandchildren, take care of whatever, paying the bills, whatever. And so the trust handles all that. The grandchildren are the trustees.
Oh, got it. So they move things into a trust so the family, the grandchildren can take care of it. So there, we could go on a whole long issue all about wills and trusts, and I know people are really interested in it, but there's another thing that I get a tremendous amount of questions about, and I know you specialize in, and it goes, so this is going to sound funny transition. While someone's still alive, because that was what happens when someone passes away, and that's where you need legal advice to figure out your wills and trusts and all that. The other big issue while someone's alive has to do with Medicaid. And I get a lot of questions of folks who are not on Medicaid, because I work with older adults and they're looking to pay for long-term care, or they are kind of shell-shocked at how expensive long-term care is and whether they will be able to
absolutely
have that. And so question, so I'm selfishly turning our conversation to say, because I don't know how to advise them, folks that are not on Medicaid, but they say, what about Medicaid? How do I go on Medicaid to pay for long-term care? And I say, talk to an attorney. So what kinds of things do attorney tell people?
Well, the biggest situation is when people years ago started saving for retirement, there is no way they could have anticipated how much the cost of long-term care has skyrocketed in the last few years. So there's no way they could have saved.
Yeah, and I saw some of your numbers. You can share them, and I'll tell you, in this area, it's even higher. Feel free to share some of them, because you and I had emailed a little bit beforehand, and I was like, I quote even higher numbers than you have, because I know this neighborhood.
Well, what I'm going to tell you are just averages. The National Center for Medicare and Medicaid, and that's the governing body, their statistics show that 44.3% of all seniors needing care are in Medicaid programs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a high percentage.
Yeah.
But I have clients who say, oh, no, I don't want to take any money from the government. And I can understand that. But if you've paid your taxes, been a good citizen all these years, think of it as there are tax loopholes. The IRS doesn't say, pay as much as you can, or don't take any deductions, or don't mm-hmm. look at any exemptions. Of course, you take all those.
Yes.
And so that's the same thing with Medicaid. It's available to us if you need it. If you're 19 to over and you're low income and you cannot afford medical care, Medicaid will pay for it. But
there's like huge, but this is where my like, ah, but like, what does low income mean? Because a lot of people just assume, and it's really, there's very strict.
Well, we'll kind of get into that.
I'm editorializing. Okay, I'm going to be quiet now.
I'd say when, and I'm going to focus right now my discussion there, Medicaid is available to younger people,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to focus just on
Thank
seniors.
You. Okay. This is the Aging Well Together show. So yeah, it'll be senior-y.
Okay. So most of us want to be in our home,
mm-hmm.
whether we have a broken leg or whatever is going on. We like our home environment. We have it just the way we want to have our living situation. We want to eat what we want to eat,
mm-hmm.
when we want to eat. We don't want somebody selecting mm-hmm. things for us. So if someone wants to stay in their home, and this is just an average, I guess it's possible someone could get less expensive care, but
oh yeah, and this yeah. average, by the way, what you say it, and then I'm going to go. It's higher in this community, but
okay,
go on.
Get,
yeah. How's that?
I had to have that disclaimer first. The average home health care is $29 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need it for 40 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
which isn't very much, because that means there's a
yeah.
lot of time that you're alone. Anyway, if it's 40 hours a week, it's $4,640 a month.
Mm-hmm. And I quote higher because in this area it's more like $30 to $34 an hour. So generally that's about $5,500 a month. Go on. So yeah, it's okay. Go on.
Now, everybody wants to be at home, but not everybody can stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have a spouse, you may need something like special medical care, IVs, mm-hmm. things like that. Or I frequently have spouses who want to take care of each other at home, but maybe it's a husband who the wife just physically isn't able to. She can't pick him up.
I have that all the time. I have so many clients. And I have a number that I don't think you have, which is for those who want 24/7, if you do that math, if you really, if you need support, and a lot of people do, you're looking at like $21,000, $22,000 a month. It gets really expensive to bring in 24/7 care at home. So, and I see that. These women, and, you know, they're big 6'5"
right,
men,
right.
And, you know.
They cannot pick them up. And they can't move them in and out of bed, everything they want to, mm-hmm. but they just can't. So sometimes a spouse has to go to assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did not get into nursing home care because that's kind of beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about.
Sure.
For Medicaid, but the average cost of assisted living in North Carolina, not mm-hmm. this specific area, is $5,095 for a one-bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, and I quote anywhere from like $5,000 to $8,000, which is, and we had a show two shows ago, had folks from local assisted living and memory care communities come on. And so that's an assisted living. And if someone needs a memory care part of assisted living, it's even more. So yeah, that's when people come to me and say, well, where does Medicaid fall into all this?
Over 50% of everyone over 65 today does not have enough money to pay for their long-term care.
Well, that's not peppy. That's depressing.
Yeah. Well, not to be depressed, but
50%.
I think it's a good thing to know that it's not a problem because you weren't able to save enough money. You didn't know you'd had to save that much
money. Yeah, that's a good point. It's not your fault.
Yeah. And I don't know whose fault it is, but you're not alone
because
mm-hmm. you're in that group of 50% of the people can't afford it.
We'll have a whole other show on that. That'll be actually a fun show talking about finances, and maybe we'll just name it, Whose Fault Is It? Okay, so you
well,
just shared that
fun.
Daunting. I know, right? Feel free to come back.
Is
Whose Fault Is It? So 50% of the people over 65 will not have the funds to care for their long-term care.
Right.
So
when we do long-term care planning, not just Medicaid planning, but it's a whole scope of long-term care planning. It's divided into two main categories. There's pre-planning,
mm-hmm.
and then there's crisis planning.
Yes, and I get both people calling me, and I say, call an attorney.
So pre-planning is the best, mm-hmm. and that is, I have a little case study that I'd like to for you folks to meet John and Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
And they are interested a little bit in pre-planning for their health care needs. It's not something that's really pressing on them. They just come to maybe Heather and mm-hmm. say, well, I've heard about this. What about it? So basically, they may have a few health care problems. Maybe take a high blood pressure pill now, mm-hmm. a prescription, just minor things. But generally, they're in good health. And they've heard about the escalation of the cost of long-term care. So they want to know, what about the cost? How much is it going to increase? What can I do about it? And they're interested in protecting their assets for the next generation. They've worked,
mm-hmm.
they've saved, they have their nest egg, maybe they inherit a little bit from their parents, and they want to pass it on to the next generation. They don't want to have to use it all up on their own long-term care. And most importantly, they have assets that exceed Medicaid's limit. So we'll talk about that in a minute, that Medicaid has asset and income restrictions, and
and they're tough. That's what, yeah.
Well, yes, they are. But with pre-planning, it could be
a wonderful thing
if people would see ahead of time. But most of us don't like to even face the fact that we might be disabled. You know, here we are just living our lives.
I know. Not here on the Aging Sunshine. Well Together show. Super friendly. I'll be super peppy, but I love to tell people, you're all one fall away from needing something. We're not going to have enough money. Let's do some planning, and let's do some planning over cocktails. It does not have to be depressing right. If you're doing it in advance. Let's just have honest conversations. I have an intern, and she's doing some social media content, and she wants to name it Death Over the Dinner Table. You know,
oh, wow.
Just in terms of having conversations. But okay, so people have come to you. John and Ruth have come to you and say, what should we do?
And so those are the people who are pre-planning.
Mm-hmm.
The other segment are people who are in crisis planning. So imagine a widow, and her name is Lucille.
Mm-hmm.
She is just about, the doctor has recommended a nursing home care for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to plan everything in anticipation of going to the nursing home, and she's not expected to return home. Now, she's not in hospice. She doesn't have any short-term life expectancy, mm-hmm. but she does have medical problems where, various medical problems, where she needs to be under constant care with IVs and regulating her sugar content and things like that in her blood. And she has exhausted all her long-term care benefits. She did plan. She bought long-term care insurance, but she used that up getting home health care.
Mm-hmm.
So now she doesn't have any mm-hmm. of that benefit. And she has started tapping into her savings.
Okay.
And paying out-of-pocket expenses for her long-term care. So the first, Medicaid has eligibility requirements. And the first thing we'll talk about is asset test and income test.
Mm-hmm.
Income in North Carolina, it varies from state to state, but in North Carolina, income is limited to the cost of care for the institutionalized spouse.
Okay.
So if the cost of care is, let's say, $6,000 and the institutionalized spouse has income of $10,000 a month, he or she needs to do planning mm-hmm. to reduce that income.
Okay.
Or else we'll never even qualify for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who is not institutionalized, Medicaid calls that person the community spouse.
If the wife's the one in needing care, so the husband's the community spouse still living at home.
Correct. And the community spouse's income is never counted for Medicaid.
Oh, that's good. Right? That's a good thing.
So,
because that's always the fear, that it will impoverish the spouse that doesn't need the care. All right, so their income is not counted.
So that's the financial eligibility. The non-financial eligibility is, for our discussion, somebody has to be 65 years of age or older,
mm-hmm.
an American citizen or a qualified resident.
Mm-hmm.
And I get this question all the time. Somebody has to be a resident of North Carolina for 6 months or more. So
yes.
Sometimes mom or dad leaves the Northeast because the winters are cold, wants to come right here to live with their children, and how soon can they qualify?
I got that recently, too.
Yeah, and it has to be 6 months.
They have to live here for 6 months before they can qualify, or privately pay for 6 months, I guess.
So far as I know, I have never had anybody in the Medicaid office investigate the 6 month.
Got it. But that is what
that's the rule is.
Okay.
So I'm only telling you what the law says.
Okay.
And the person who is receiving Medicaid has to agree to reside in a Medicaid approved facility.
which is a whole other issue because there's not that many. I've done research. There's some. In our area, there's only a few. There are not that many, and sometimes they're not the type of communities people. I want to be respectful of the folks that run them because they're some really great people doing great things with not a lot there. But it's not always easy to find Medicaid places. It's not always the type of place you would want. And then even if you find a place, there's not availability. Occupancy can remain very high.
Well, it's a business decision. Mm-hmm. As you said, the people who work there and run those facilities are caring individuals, but Medicaid doesn't pay very much.
No.
And so they would not be able to continue to operate their business if everybody was Medicaid. So they allocate a few beds, mm-hmm. just a few. And when those beds are filled, they won't accept anybody else for Medicaid.
No, and I will not name them. And in the last 2 weeks, because I was researching for a client, three communities that were mixed had Medicaid and non-Medicaid
right.
stopped taking Medicaid at all. And so our options in our area have gone down even lower.
Well, the other thing people are shocked about is the Medicaid recipient does not get to choose where they are located.
Oh, okay. Because I just thought, okay, they could go to the place here and then it would, all right, she's shaking her head. All right, keep going, Mary. Explain this as part of the,
you know,
this is part of the crisis.
I've had some people who said, oh, well, Mom doesn't want to go there, whatever that small town is. You know, that's what's available. So privately pay until something else shows up. This is what is showing up right now. So
so you did the age and you did the income, but I understand it to be even more complex than that because they look into more, maybe is it the assets? Because if you have medical needs that, you know, it's not just your income, I thought, you know, for folks with Medicaid, if they say, well, I have $2,000 or $4,000 a month, and this is $8,000 a month. I thought like there's other things that get looked at. Because I was looking for a gentleman. I know you're looking at your notes. So I was looking for a gentleman recently, and they said, you know, even if we accepted Medicaid, we need to make sure he would actually qualify. Because a lot of people assume, and then they go and meet with social services and find out you don't qualify.
Well, that's true. You know, that's why it's not one size fits all.
Mm.
There are just all these different components
that
fit together.
This is why you have to talk to an attorney. This is why it all goes, okay, got it.
The financial qualifications are more complex than the non-financial.
Mm-hmm.
Non-financial, you live here, you're 65 or older, you've been in North Carolina for 6 months or less, and you're willing to accept any Medicaid facility for mm-hmm. long-term care. You got that part.
Sure.
Now, the financial has to be weighed back and forth. So, for Medicaid purposes, assets are divided into two categories.
Mm-hmm.
Countable assets and exempt assets.
Mm-hmm.
For countable assets, the Medicaid recipient can only have $2,000 of countable assets.
That's where it gets hard. Only 2,000 of assets in their name.
So what...
And people are like, I've worked so hard to have a little bit of a nest egg, and that little bit of a nest egg, messes them up a little bit.
Yeah, $2,000, I mean, what is that in today's economy? It's just nothing.
Yeah.
So that is where Medicaid planning comes in mm-hmm. to transfer assets from a countable category to an exempt category.
Okay.
Exempt assets are not considered in Medicaid qualification calculations. And we're not going to get into all the calculations.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it requires a spreadsheet. It requires many hours of mm-hmm. work. And if you do one thing, are there tax implications?
Mm-hmm.
If you do something else, there aren't any tax implications, but
does it affect... That tax attorney part of you that actually went into elder
right.
law, but... So and so I think it's important for people because one of their fears is that they're going to lose their home. But isn't that one of the exempt if you have a community living spouse or something? How does the home?
It is exempt. Ooh. Up to $713,000 in equity. So that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's to qualify for Medicaid. After qualification, when the Medicaid recipient dies, Medicaid agency can put a lien against the property.
Oof.
To recoup all the cost of care. And so their argument is, and I could see both sides of the argument.
Sure.
Well, we have to reimburse taxpayers for all the money that they've spent.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
And isn't it, but they'll let your spouse live in it for a while.
Yes.
And then
yes.
After so this is why. Okay, so we'll change subjects in a second, because basically this whole issue of, and I wanted to have a show, and we're doing a few other things all on Medicaid, because I get questions about this all the time. And the answer I just keep saying is it depends. Don't assume anything. And it does take some pre-planning. I do think it's important to say why the pre-planning, because there's a look back period. And that's why it's important not to put it off if you see Medicaid as a possibility in the future.
Okay. Well, the basic thing is, if someone came to you and said, you'd qualify for Medicaid, but you have too many assets, well, what would be the first thing you do? Write a check to a loved one and say,
here.
And so now I qualify. Well, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it used to work 30 years ago.
Okay.
But now it's called a 5-year look back. The agency, the Medicaid agency, looks back 5 years and sees what has been transferred and counts that all in the aggregate, and then divides it by a divisor that changes every year.
Oh, confusing.
And then that's the number of months that a person is ineligible for Medicaid, has to private pay.
Okay, so again, really complicated. Again, the moral of the story is, this is like when we've had a few shows, at least one or two on veterans benefits, and the takeaway is always, these things are complex. Don't assume anything, and you want to get a professional to go through and kind of help you sort out what are options. If I want to, because we have about 10 minutes left. And so I want to touch on just a few other issues that are really important. You did touch on, and feel free if I miss something about Medicaid that you want to jump in.
Well, let me just go through what are the exempt assets.
Sure.
The primary.
And exempt again. These are assets that are not counted towards your Medicaid.
Right, because you can only have $2,000.
Yep.
So not counted are the primary residence,
mm-hmm.
and that is equity up to $713,000,
mm-hmm.
household furnishings and appliances, personal effects, maybe your jewelry, your clothing, a vehicle, prepaid burial expenses. So if somebody has too many assets, they could immediately have either a funeral trust or go to a funeral home and get prepaid burial expenses. It's going to be needed anyway.
Yeah,
and
it's expensive.
Everything that's in the prepaid burial expense category is not countable. Term life insurance. Because it has no resale value.
Yeah,
it's just,
okay.
And irrevocable trusts, if they were created 5 years prior to applying for Medicaid.
Oh, that's where it gets interesting, because if you have created the irrevocable trust, and can you then transfer money within the 5 years, because you've already created the trust, but you can...
No, the transfer has to be...
Five-year
look back. So,
interesting.
Anything beyond 5 years in one day, Medicaid just disregards it.
Okay.
It says... You know, these are their rules. It's a little strict, but they wanted to have it 20 years.
A 20-year look back.
But
that was
squashed. But anyway.
All right.
So everything that's not countable, basically as an asset, if it's not exempt, it's countable.
So I guess, even though I said I was going to change topics, my very general question, have you had clients that... Have you had complexity where you've had clients that wanted it and you're like, it's just not going to happen? Or are you usually able to, with enough pre-planning, make it work?
For pre-planning,
pre-planning, yes. You can make it work. If you have more than 5 years, you can make it work.
But crisis planning takes a lot more work.
Yes.
But it's all doable.
Okay.
And it's that transferring of assets in a way that does not disqualify someone because of the 5-year look back. That's okay. The whole thing. Now, the beauty, you mentioned veterans just briefly.
Mm-hmm, I did.
The beauty of veterans benefits is, however, whatever the amount that a veteran receives or a surviving spouse is not countable for Medicaid purposes.
Oh, that's, I saw that in something that you had. Okay, so that's helpful to know. So the other planning that I just wanted to touch on, because you touched on the importance of guardianship earlier and helping to identify who your guardian of your estate, the guardian of your person, your general guardian, that you want to be able to set that up and avoid the courts. But and we can maybe touch on this, but I do, you also help with something that I think is really important, and I know people are really interested, of something called special needs planning. Those who have family members, loved ones with special needs. And I know that, you know, I've seen older adults who have adult children with disabilities or younger parents who have young children with disabilities. I didn't know if you want to say a word about special needs planning.
Well, I started into that because I represent veterans. And some veterans who are young are catastrophically disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Their parents are currently taking care of them. The VA has a wonderful program where they provide stipends to caregiver parents, and that can be several $1,000s a mm-hmm. year, maybe $10,000 a year. Health insurance programs, all kinds of benefits that are wonderful. We take care of veterans. We, meaning the United States government,
yes.
Our tax dollars take mm-hmm. care of veterans and their caregivers. But parents are concerned about, well, I can take care of my child, my mm-hmm. adult child now, but what happens when I'm not able to do so?
Yes.
And that's where the special needs planning came in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found that other people beside are caring for loved ones besides their veterans who have returned.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are adult children now
mm-hmm.
who need someone to continue that care.
Mm-hmm. Years ago, I was in a session with other attorneys, and I heard something, and you can tell me, is that you want to be thoughtful about how you leave money if you have a child or grandchildren with special needs, and you're like, oh, I want to leave money for them, and you're shaking your head because of what I heard, which is you got to be very careful how you leave that money, because what you may be doing is making them ineligible for Medicaid.
Absolutely.
Or even, I've seen, you know, financial aid of other sorts, even academic financial aid. Like, be very careful in how you pass on money, because you may actually cause more harm. Is that, did I hear that correctly? Because your eyes went.
Okay. Because
I listened.
If a child, we're talking about an adult child.
Yes, or even under 18, and then they're going to have college and other, or academic support anyway.
So the trust for special needs planning has to be structured so that any assets going to the disabled person
mm-hmm.
are below the limit.
Mm-hmm.
So if they go over the limit, just as we talked about Medicaid having mm-hmm. Income and asset restrictions, same thing with anybody else who's qualifying for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. Who, and so you want to be really careful.
So they don't get a lump sum of money, because when they do, then they're disqualified. And some of these folks have very expensive prescription drugs they have to be on. Or their cost of care.
Yeah, all these sort of special programs, and it just messes it up. And I never thought about that. It was one of those things. So I hate that we only have 2 minutes left. I will tell you, we'll find another time for you to come back. Selfishly, as I was stalking you, I was so intrigued when I saw that you were a member of the United States Supreme Court bar. Have you actually argued in front of this? How does that happen? I don't know what that means.
Accept 1-2% of the cases you submit.
Got it.
But
have you submitted?
Some veterans, mm-hmm. I have, but
wow.
Some veterans pursue their appeals, and they can pursue it all the way to the Supreme Court bar.
Got it. It doesn't mean it will be.
Right. But recently, you know, there have been a lot of wonderful things like Camp Lejeune right here in mm-hmm. our own area, where individuals for 30 years had to drink and bathe and wash their dishes and everything.
Yeah. Wonderful being sarcastic in that scenario. Yeah,
and contaminated water.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the federal government said, okay,
all right,
we accept these scientific reports. And they're compensated. Of course, they aren't compensated for 30 years of misery.
I know. And so that did go to the Supreme Court? Okay. And so I just thought that was so interesting that you were a member of it.
It went to the Federal Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims.
Got it.
And it was a tort action against the Department of Defense. You can imagine how difficult that was to win.
I mean, it's hard enough to figure out Medicaid here in our county. And then, all right, Mary, I hate that we're running out of time. And while this is in no way a commercial for your business, if people do want to continue the conversation and really talk to you, how do people find you? I can do that. You can share how they can find you.
Okay. My website is MMARKO. The as in Victor, ICH.com. My phone number is 919-676-1500.
Ooh, I love that you added your phone number. I joke around people. Okay, now what's your social security number? No, don't add that. All right, Mary Markovich, I cannot thank you enough. I can't wait. I'm so excited. We'll talk afterwards about having you come on the show and continue educating us on other topics. But really, thank you so much for coming on Aging Well Together. And as always, I have to do a thank you to WCOM for hosting us, to the Orange County Department on Aging for sponsoring our show. Mary, did you have any last, I realize I just jumped to the transition, but any final words?
Thank you for inviting me. I hope that I can help somebody, whether you call me or not. I hope this information helps somebody.
Great. Oh, well, thank you. As always, yes, we want to be a source of information and hopefully, right, what we say, a little bit of entertainment. And with that, we will turn it over to the rest of the programming and look forward to talking with you all again soon.